And good evening, guys. Good evening. Good evening. Welcome. Welcome. Welcome to this edition, or this, well, pre-Easter weekend edition of the Business and Economic Zone here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. And I know a lot of you guys are out there heading off to your various destinations for the long weekend. Once again, let's just reiterate the sentiment in terms of being safe, driving safe, ensuring that you arrive alive where you're intended to go, and please do not indulge in drinking while driving. Now, as this is, you know, one of those customary long weekends when people are looking to escape the everyday, you know, hustle and bustle lifestyle in terms of your 8 to 5, your daily runarounds, or even if you're just at home for this entire weekend, just trying to kick back and enjoy it. The world of business, finance, and economics does not rest as easy as that. Although, if you have to look at it in essence, for example, something like the international trade markets and platforms, they actually have rested. The U.S. now only started their Thursday, technically. So they will be closing by later tonight or early tomorrow morning when their Thursday stops. But here's the discussion point, guys. Where we left off last night was in terms of the sovereign wealth fund establishment, and you know, shared a little bit of the nitty-gritties with regards to that discussion, being that Namibia's one is known as the Welvitia Sovereign Wealth Fund. It has already received its sort of like first contribution, that being part of the 413 million Namibian dollars that the central bank declared as a dividend payout or as a revenue to the government. So it will see its first sort of like cash injection or first, you know, deposit or savings deposit into that fund. And we also covered some of the other important discussion points regarding the sovereign wealth fund by taking a look first and foremost at to what the sovereign wealth funds actually look like. Who are the biggest ones in the world? What is some of the attention that they attract? As well as also concerns regarding that attention. Because as I mentioned, guys, this is money that just keeps growing. This is an account that just keeps growing. Now, if you want to add in anything else that looks like an aspersion or an assumption, perhaps, let's first wait there. First stop there. The best examples in the world that exist of sovereign wealth funds is the Norwegian one, the UAE one, the Kuwaiti one. There's not much information coming out of China in terms of, you know, how things work. Sometimes if you do get information out of the Chinese economic situation, you've got to sort of like look at it as the best possible example of information that you can get. Why say this? Well, if you have, you know, an cultural understanding of how the Far East Asian countries and governments and societies are structured, anything that you hear could potentially be not the whole picture. Now, there is another one in terms of even the Saudi Arabian one is also another big one. The Saudi Arabian one is the one that actually bought the British or the English soccer team, Newcastle United, here at the end of last year. But its name is actually PIF. The PIF fund is linked to Saudi Aramco. Saudi Aramco, as you guys know, is the sort of like the SOE in charge of Saudi Arabia's biggest commodity, that being their oil, their crude oil. And Saudi Aramco feeds into the PIF. Now, the PIF is run by the one of the princes, one of the family members. He's actually, he's not a prince. He's actually just one of the closest, you know, confidants to the Saudi royal family. You also have the Qatari one, which is known as the Qatar Investment Authority, the QIA. They've also had their hand in a lot of sort of like international investment projects themselves. Most the reason I'm giving you, I'm listing all these guys is because all these sovereign wealth funds have decided or are used as instruments to diversify the revenue, the income structure or the incomes for a country. For example, if I just opening up the Qatari one, the Qatari Investment Authority. They've got subsidiaries. Subsidiaries, as you guys know, are, you know, smaller companies that they've got stakes in. They own the entire ownership structure. So they've got stuff like the Harrods Estates, Harrods Aviation, Air Harrods, the QNB Group, Barwa Group, and so the links, and so the list just goes on. And these are usually companies or organizations that compete and that are central in various forms of industry, in various forms of economic structure, meaning you won't just find a sovereign wealth fund owning you know most of the companies that operate in the same industry. That would be a bit, you know, nonsensical of approach. However, this is as wide and as broad an approach in terms of the investment portfolio that these sovereign wealth fund organizations would then be tapping into. Now, I say tapping in because essentially you are buying into a successful organization. You won't buy into something that's struggling. Buying into something that's struggling usually means or implies that you have a turnaround strategy. You know, you buy into it, meaning you invest into it to do something good, to generate or to give new direction to how the organization needs to move. Now, if I take a look, for example, at the other big one that I mentioned, the Norwegian one, just taking a look at the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund, for that matter. Oh, wow. Actually closed that window. But just, you know, having a look at the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth one. And this one, technically, in terms of what it has bought into, or, you know, what it has invested into, As of October 2010, the fund has that sovereign wealth fund of Norway. I almost said Ukraine. Of Norway has spent 600 million Norwegian kroner. Kroner is just the Scandinavian word for crowns, Norwegian crowns, which translates to 136.4 million US dollars daily in terms of buying foreign currencies. Now, that is one strategy. You would ask me then, you know, why would a sovereign wealth fund do such a, you know, do something like that? Well, here's the thing. It is a benefit to the central bank. For example, if our central bank does the same thing, you know, they buy, let's say, for that amount that they invest, that would be designated to the sovereign wealth fund, let's say 300 million, And that 300 million is then used to buy or to shore up foreign currency, or to buy a stake in foreign currencies. If you guys did not know that, you can actually buy foreign currency as a country. Foreign currency as a country, you can buy it, or even as a trader. Sorry. No, let me restructure my approach. You can purchase and own a stake in a foreign currency. If you guys remember the very harsh example I gave in terms of last week of the Scottish, or it was the French trader. It was a scandal in 1996, a financial, international financial scandal. The guy owned, he owned the majority of, I think it's Malaysia or Indonesia's or Singapore's currency, and he could decide what direction to take with it. Now, it's the same thing. It's the same issue that the United States has with China, because China is the only country in the world that owns the largest foreign currency stockpile in US denomination. Actually, no, let me rephrase that. They own the largest foreign currency, US dollar deposit outside of the United States. And that's even separate from the investments that China itself has done with regards, like for example, like some that China and Japan themselves have done, and even Korea, South Korea, have done in the United States. Meaning, if you had to like put value to the various investments, especially in technology, in industry, economic development, employment, you know, the list goes on. In terms of what the Chinese, the Japanese, and the South Korean markets have implemented and also done in the United States, it's something that if they had to withdraw all that investment, they could bankrupt the United States. They could. Now, that is something different. I'm just giving you, you know, that was just like a horror story scenario that I gave you. But owning the largest sort of like, what do they call that? What does our governor call it? The foreign currency deposits or foreign currency reserve. Yeah, reserve. Foreign currency reserve. China is the largest one in terms of having the largest United States dollar, US dollar reserve, foreign currency reserve. The largest one. It's also one of the major fears that the Americans have in terms of that, because China has so much, China can actually devalue the United States dollar at any time. Now, as mentioned here in terms of what the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund has done, they are actually buying a stake in other currencies. So what they're doing is they're actually accumulating foreign currency reserves, or they're actually, you know, building it up, stockpiling in that sense. Well, there is a handful of strategies that play in the benefit of such a strategy. What are some of these handful of strategies? First and foremost, you can look after your sort of like your export import balance, meaning as a country, the money that you can pay to other countries in terms of goods and services that need to cross the borders, goods and services that have to be imported, goods and services that have been exported, and all that other kind of, you know, jazz that takes place. Second on to that is also, it will also allow your central bank or whatever authority or the administrator in charge of the sovereign wealth fund to ensure that, you know, a healthy balance in terms of like a foreign currency reserve that supports your local currency. So if you have got a very, very big foreign currency reserve, this can somewhat shore up the value of your local currency, of your country's currency. But it's not one of the wisest moves, because, you know, things can happen. Various policies can take place anywhere else in the world, and this can impact your, not just your foreign currency reserves, but also the value of your local currency. Second on to that is also, it then also helps your country in terms of playing a vital role in terms of any other, you know, sort of like trade, policy implementation strategies that take place within a regional bloc, for example, SACU and SADC. And it's just one of the, you know, just as the benefits go on in that regard. Now, remember, in last night's discussion, a sovereign wealth fund can take two strategies. One is a stabilization strategy or category. The other one is just purely a savings kitty. It's just purely a savings account. Now, the major concern, if it's not there for stabilization, for example, like in the Norwegian one, the Norwegian one is technically actually a savings kitty, because they're buying up foreign currency, and, you know, in terms of doing that, it helps them stabilize any economic shocks that they can experience externally and internally as well. That's just my, you know, very basic approach in terms of understanding that, because if you have foreign currency reserves, it's actually a good, it's a plus. And if you've got big stockpiles of it, it's a bigger plus. Now, the Norwegian one plays the strategy of a savings kitty. Remember that, a savings kitty. The Qatari one that I mentioned plays a stabilization element, meaning they've bought into industries, into markets, because as Qatar, guys, Qatar knows that the clock is ticking, just like Saudi Aramco. they know that the clock is ticking in terms of fuel, the world's dependence on fossil fuel, especially crude oil. So what they've actually done is this sovereign wealth fund acts as an investment arm. Like what has been, you know, like what has been written and discussed about, like, for example, what the GIPF approach or the GIPF's role in the Namibian market. Imagine now Namibia's sovereign wealth fund takes over that role of the GIPF role. It takes it over and it does more and it can do more. For instance, what do I mean by that? It can, first and foremost, buy, for example, like what the Norwegians do, buy foreign or shore up Namibia's foreign currency reserve. Or secondly, it buys into strategic industries in Namibia. For example, it could and it can buy, for example, into further mineral extraction projects here in the country, which would then probably allow it to try and sell, or the organization, the company that they bought into, would then try and sell on the international stock exchanges these raw materials or these extracted minerals. And that would then translate into some form of direct income for the sovereign wealth fund. The wealth fund then would all then be able to declare any earnings, any dividends, any revenues to government. So the wealth fund, remember, you can use any terminology for the stabilization tactic. The stabilization tactic can be either diversification of investment portfolio for the country, meaning earnings potential. Secondly, it can be an instrument for the country to invest further and generate further wealth or further income. It's not technically wealth, but further income. Remember, it's there to stay there forever. Well, forever is a pretty big term, but you get the gist of the discussion point. Now, before we touch the top of the hour at 7 o'clock, there will be time for on-air participation, on-air discussion points. You can come through at from 7 o'clock onwards. But guys, let's keep it to a minimum because I still want us to get into some good discussion points that still stem from the sovereign wealth fund as a discussion. However, at least this is one of the aspects or one of the strategies in the country that has begun to kick off. It has begun to kick off, which is a bonus for all, which is a bonus for everyone. But it's still early days, guys. Remember, the Sovereign Wealth Fund is technically a savings kitty or a savings account, and it is something that will potentially draw attention in terms of international hedge fund managers, or, you know, you mention it. Now, I wanted to stress, guys, in terms of some of those concerns that I ended on last night. Now, I mentioned that in the US, for example, they had a Secretary of Treasury, this gentleman known as Lawrence Summers. Now, Lawrence Summers was the Secretary of Treasury for the United States between 1999 to 2001. And then he was also part of the U.S. National Economic Council from 2009 to 2010. Now, he brought in, generally as a minister of finance there in the U.S., he had some fears with regards to these sovereign wealth funds. Now, the biggest of the world's sovereign wealth funds aim to be associated to the American market. Because let me explain this to you why that is one of the wisest strategies that any sovereign wealth fund can take. And it's something that actually pains my heart, because it really pains my heart. But here's the thing. If you had to give me the option in terms of saying, okay, listen, Dwight, you're in charge of Namibia's sovereign wealth fund, known as Velvicia Sovereign Wealth Fund. If you had the option between South Africa and the United States to try and diversify Namibia's potential in earnings, which of the two countries would you look at? Well, here's the thing. The unfortunate thing with South Africa is South Africa has some of the same I'll call it illnesses. They've got some of the similar illnesses that we have here in Namibia in terms of, you know, having the guts to enforce policy, or having one or other guts in terms of.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken, some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers,
limit or avoid travel, and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
Now we come back, guys, from that extended break. I took that extended break because I just, you know, needed to slightly get a little bit of a breather. But we're back. And where I ended off was playing a little bit of devil's advocate in terms of decision making. Now, if you gave me the option in terms of, let's say, okay, Dwight, here's a hypothetical scenario. You are in charge of Namibia's sovereign wealth fund. It won't happen, guys. I'm just saying it won't happen. I'm not also gunning for that position, but it won't happen. And you had the option, and I had the option of terms of looking at two investment destinations in terms of markets, that being either South Africa or that being the USA. And I'll motivate now why I say the USA or the US. Because the US is one of the few countries in the world, actually the only country in the world, that can make the money back that it borrows almost within a week. 7 days later. 7 days later, the US can make the money back. They can generate the money to pay back. South Africa will have to work on the same terminal, on the same, you know, repayment terms or maturity of their loans or whatever fancy, you know, terminology is always used by Kanchengo sometimes. I'm not knocking my colleague, but nonetheless, he sometimes likes going into those detailed and technical discussion points. Wherever you are, Kanchengo, apologies slightly, but nonetheless, you know, taking all that jargon, taking all that technical terminology out. If anyone gave me the option in terms of running a sovereign wealth fund, and they gave me the option in terms of telling me, or the options, Dwight, where do you want to invest? I would go with USA. I would straight up say, even if we just have the money that the same amount, let's say it was just 100 million Namibian dollars, I would say go and invest it in South Africa, in the USA. The USA can give us, they can give us back what we invest, plus we can earn exponential, interest percentages on whatever, wherever we invest in. And then we can just reinvest it every time and just constantly go like that every time. Whereas if you had to do it in South Africa, you know, you'll be technically like in a bigger swimming pool than what Namibia is. So if South Africa is the swimming pool, Namibia would be like the kiddies pool. you know? So you'll just be in two swimming pools the whole time. It's like going here to the, like going here to the public swimming pool in Olympia, or the one there between Comasdal and Karatura, and that's all you'll be doing. You'll just be moving between two public pools the whole time. But if you be, if you go to one of the largest markets in the world, you'll be able to make exponential, you'll be able to generate exponential earnings. Now, besides that little session of waffling there, a sovereign wealth fund, guys, nonetheless, has its concerns. Now, most of it, most of those concerns have come from the United States itself, because there are countries that have generated and have developed and have grown and nurtured pretty massive ones. The first and the biggest one in the world is the Norwegian one. Second on that is also, these sovereign wealth funds have something known as, or not something known, they are actually rumored to be inadequately transparent, which is a major concern for investors and regulators. For example, size and the source of funding. So if there is like a, if let's say you were in the Olympia public swimming pool and you know that everyone there is a private investor trying to, you know, just to get their extra dollar going in terms of whatever investment. Now you see a whole school bus show up for just one guy. And that guy tells you all to get out of the pool. And he alone gets into the pool. That's what these sovereign wealth funds look like. They are, what do they call that term? I almost said the bulls or the bears. But they are like bullish, yeah, bullish and bearish markets are different types of investment terminology. But they are like, let's call it the big bear, the big bull walking into the kraal or walking into, you know, the zoo. And they just tell you all to, guys, just get out of the pool. The pool is mine. Just get out. But you know that your $10 to get and make use of the pool is just as good as whatever he spent on. And that's what you don't know, because you don't know what the size of his investment was to reserve a whole pool to himself. Now that's the threat that these sovereign wealth funds pose. Because here's the strategy, guys. I've explained to you what China has done to the United States. I've explained to you what Norway is still doing, but they probably might have diversified, because Norway themselves have weighed up their population dynamics in terms of the demographics, in terms of that they've actually got a rapidly aging population, and their birth rate is pretty small, or is pretty stagnant. I'll say stagnant. Plus, in between, they can't venture into any major capital projects. Now, if Namibia is to do the same, or to emulate Norway, here's the thing. I'll list off the disadvantages for now. Firstly, these two oil finds here in the south of Namibia, these two offshore finds, came at the wrong time. They came too late as well. Secondly, I'll admit it now, but the strategy around our natural resource allocation, meaning our minerals, meaning our fishing even, meaning even our beef, which we export, because your sovereign wealth fund is usually linked to some or other commodities that you make money from. It's good that it's now been established, but the, what do they call it? The opportunity lost in the previous 220 years of Namibia's emergence. Why wasn't this an option? Why wasn't this one of the first ideas that would have assisted Namibia in, first and foremost, probably trying to become one of Africa's first world countries? Remember, first world countries. We could have still stayed pegged to South Africa. We could have still done that. Although that would have been a longer strategy to implement, And second onto that is also you'd have to work through a lot of the, I almost said red tape, but you know, all the policy that would have been introduced between 1990 up to 2010. It's 20 years. I'm only picking those 20 years. Because that Norwegian wealth fund or sovereign wealth fund, that thing is, let's say, it only became noticeable to everybody here from 2014. Only from 2014 off, the British and the Americans and whoever was starting to talk of the Norwegian sovereign wealth fund. Now, in terms of this, in terms of our take here, guys, I'm quickly stepping to a short ad and then we're getting to the phone lines because I see the lines are flashing nonstop. And just after this, we'll get into the first caller.
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from $100 Namibian per month, including VAT for prepaid, or $345 Namibian per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit na.paratus.africa for more information. Always prepared.
Now, from that quick break, we step into the first caller and let's hear what they have to add. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yeah, we shall contain our talking into 3 minutes so that we can have more time.
No problem. No, finding you, Uncle Bona. How are you doing?
Yeah, you see, the thing is, the demand is high because you are now ending up at 7:30, isn't it?
Mm.
As you have adjusted your time. So, and this is where the important is that the this is the topic where we are creating wealth.
Mm.
So not only at the national level, but at our own level, individually level.
Mm.
Because there was a former minister was talking about these things and say, yes, they can't even meet the demand of supplying products and even services.
Mm.
So maybe the service, let me say not, but I see you, if you have a, if you can able to meet the target, the demand there, that yes, there's no need for you again to go and source out from South Africa, for example, then you understand?
Yeah.
It's another problem. And those are actually opportunities that are there. Those opportunities are not yet lost. So even though the like you say, one of the advantages came late. I think it came late because perhaps there was no innovation in that one.
Or it probably was not even on the table yet, Uncle Bona. Meaning?
It wasn't, because you are now talking about now green economy, where we are now trying to utilize the technology and things like that. And you see now, even these things like AgriBank unveiled visual training for farmers. Then can you see now these kind of things that are coming? So now you are saying, if we can belong, and I yesterday I listened, or the day before yesterday, I listened to the advantage that you can get from SACU in terms of having your product. But the issue of this automatic kind of material, because when you look at the market now, and you look at the Western, you look at the Chinese, and the way I'm now lumping up this BRICS, country, this brick, the block. So you were talking about if you could to get an option, you could be given an option, you can invest in America.
Or in South Africa.
Or in South Africa. That's South Africa. Any country that is under BRICS, even though their financial instrument maybe still need to be working, I think it's working. So maybe they are just finding a modality, a strategy to make sure that they link everything. I was listening to the message of Russia and how they are doing it. I don't know whether it was Kevin who brought it in there or somewhere else. So then if China has the biggest, because in terms of their population and things, even the money, the value that you're talking about. So if they decide and say, yes, now this is America and others, so you get to this kind of precondition, will they be able to survive?
Who's this now, Uncle Bona? China or
like the Americans, the British, and all these other things. So what? If now, like you say, China now decide and say, fine, you guys, like the way they are doing it to Russia now, in terms of sanctions. If China now decides and all these BRICS and others and say, yes, yeah, we are also going to give you some conditions. So without looking at the, because there's a market there now, even when you look at our cars, vehicles, Kevin today was talking about the vehicles and the spare parts and the, if they are obtained from that market, it becomes difficult and things like that. You know, those kind of dynamics, the national market. So, and now, if now China and others, the BRICS and South Africa, because you are talking about, if they decide to put some kind of condition, not necessary condition, or sanction, but just to make sure that they formalize their strategies, work together and make sure that at least we are all able. Because I know the developing market, emerging market like the Chinese and those, these Asian takers, very soon they are going to conquer the market.
Well, Angabona, they actually have. It's one of the, I'll break your question down for you into scenarios. So the overall scenario is what we have seen so far being that Russia is the one experiencing the sanctions. And so the United States is now running to both China and India at the same time because they're the two BRICS members with the largest influence because they buy the most and sell the most to China because both of them are in close, you know, they're in close proximity of China. Not of China, of Russia. So far, the BRICS bloc itself, Angabona, has, and I'm giving you a little bit of the historical aspect because The guys that are the powerhouses in the UN, that's now minus China and Russia, this includes everyone that's part of the NATO alliance, have tried in the past to undermine BRICS, especially when BRICS was formed, even when Jacob Zuma was still president of South Africa. So they have tried to undermine the BRICS strategy. Firstly, it was when China's President Xi Jinping announced the Belt and Road Initiative.
Yes, that one. When are you going to have time to, for us to discuss that one? Because see, that will help us also when we are talking about all discovery and things like that, so that we can connect our energy and everything. So please find the time for us to examine this. The Belt and Road.
Okay, Angabona, do you want me to break it down while you're on air?
Not now. So because of the time and the people are calling. So you can, I know you can, the way you are driving. So we just want to make sure that we capitalize our ties and this block. Because now if we can seriously do these things, then I don't think they will be seriously even the war and all this scrounging of the natural resources, and therefore you find somebody neglected there, and they, you know, the war also begins from the scrounging of this. And people, because the world, the trade structure or the world economic structure is not balanced. It's not a healthy condition.
It technically isn't because there is, what do they call that thing? I almost said stockpiling, but it's almost like they are hedging everything in the Northern Hemisphere. And the Northern Hemisphere includes that entire NATO alliance and Japan. And Australia, if you include Australia and New Zealand as well.
You see, that's why Japan is also trying to cause problems. Those are the ones who are worsening the situation even between Russia and Ukraine. They are the ones who are causing them. So, great. Let me leave you the time for others to come.
All right. Thanks a lot, Angabona. Now, getting away from that point, guys, and just to quickly conceptualize the undermining of the BRICS bloc by the NATO, we'll call it who they are, technically by the NATO alliance. Now, if you guys can remember back, the Belt and Road Initiative in force was actually in force introduced here from about, 2013, 2014. And from that instance also, the BRICS guys or the BRICS bloc was then initiated by Russia's Putin, as well as also by Xi Jinping. And the same at that stage, who do they have as the Brazilian president? It was the woman that was in charge of the Brazil World Cup. She was the successor to Lula. Lula, the first Brazilian president that was incarcerated for supposed corruption. He has now come out. He's now put his name forth again as a contender in the next Brazilian presidential election against Jair Bolsonaro. And in that same vein, because of who this woman, Brazilian president who followed up after Lula, because she's from the same party as Lula. So Lula was still pulling the strings, as was reported by the Western media, that Lula is still behind the scenes, you know, as someone giving insights and consultation to Brazil's female president before Bolsonaro. And at various intervals, when the Belt and Road Initiative kicked off in China, because Xi Jinping was going on a massive international tour. He even ended up in London. And I remember that incident because he came late to the military parade wherein the Queen of England, Elizabeth, had invited him and his wife to attend. But you have to be careful, especially if you deal with, customs from Asia. In Asia, it is allowed for a guest to come late, guys. I'm enjoying this a little bit because he actually made them wait for 30 minutes. I'm sorry for that, but it is just funny because in Asia, it is customary for your guests to come late. Now, besides that discussion point, the Belt and Road Initiative, essentially, included the major... the major drive of also the BRICS bloc, the formation of the BRICS bloc itself. And what does that mean is that the formation of the BRICS bloc would then have allowed them to look at perhaps their own payment system or their own SWIFT system or their own money transfer system, as well as also converging, policy as well as also trade, as well as also various other facets between these various geographic areas. Now, if you had to look at the disadvantage that the BRICS guys had to suffer, the unfortunate thing is Russia's entire coastline, their most accessible coastlines to the most advantageous, marine traffic ways or marine pathways, is here through the Adriatic that runs there past Finland and Sweden and Norway and Denmark and Germany. As well as also here where they've got their furthest most eastward city of Vladivostok here on the here in the North China or what not North China, but that Sea of Japan here close to Japan, as well as then the entire coastline that they have that bridges or borders on the North Pole. Second on that is also one of the easiest ways was to access into the Chinese physical transport network, because China's major ports are Hong Kong, Shanghai, there's one or two more. Macau is also one. I know Macau is also one, although Macau is similar to Hong Kong's setup. It's a financial hub, but Macau is more like the Las Vegas of China. And then there was also India that they could have tapped into in terms of India's logistical infrastructure and support systems. So those three countries actually border with each other and they link into each other. But you've got the two most furthest flung of the members being Brazil and South Africa. South Africa being the most industrialized economy on this continent. But it's at the south point of the continent. It is on one of the major pathways for trade, that being by ship. But it is out of the way for any air traffic. It is out of the way for any land-based trade, meaning by truck. So if you had to connect South Africa, you would have to go through Kenya. And there's also, who's the other guy? I think also Tanzania, that border with each other. So you would have to link Kenya, Tanzania, Mozambique with South Africa to develop that eastern coast. Second on this, that is also Brazil was far flung on its own. Brazil is South America's most advanced and its biggest and its strongest economy. Also, it's most resilient, as well as also that their economic policies and anything they do, Brazil actually forms part of, I think it's part of the top 20 economies in the world. Top 20 or top 25, to be safe, you know, spare change. The unfortunate thing is, the first started off the, you know, the slight, the introduction of the slight, sort of like, or the first waves of the trade war between the US and China started under the last segment or the last term of Obama. Trump obviously took that over, but Trump just made it worse. He amplified it. So things were going wrong pretty badly, because a trade war actually escalated every day, every week. Second on to that is, it basically silenced the entire Belt and Road Initiative. Because the Belt and Road Initiative, guys, from China, would have run through most of modern day, most of America's allies that you have seen, perhaps in terms of their strategic alliances, which includes Pakistan, which includes, who else is there? There was another country that I forgot. It would have run through Iraq. By that stage, the Americans had partially withdrawn out of Iraq. It would have run through Iraq. It would have connected into Turkey, either run through Syria, but it connected into Turkey. But unfortunately, Syria had experienced its Arab Spring. Iraq was the birthplace of ISIL and ISIS. What else was there? The second thing was also that they still had sort of like the gray space known as Afghanistan. And, well, technically Afghanistan has no economy. Then the strategic allies of Pakistan was a major concern, because the Americans were asking questions in terms of, why is Pakistan, you know, having, accommodating these discussions with the UN, with China. Now, I know, guys, it sounds like the show has gone into like a foreign policy discussion point. But it's just, this is just for you to see the moves behind the move. The moves behind the move. Because the Belt and Road Initiative, which was Xi Jinping's sort of like grand idea. It was this grand idea to make China, to pull the whole focus in terms of economic importance away from Western Europe. Because Western Europe, guys, here's one thing that I have to share with you. Western Europe is a resource impoverished area. It is the most resource impoverished place on this planet. This includes natural resources and even land. And it's one of the important things that LPM's party leader, Bernardo Sorboy, has mentioned multiple times during the genocide discussions that were held in the parliament process by, can you as a Namibian go to Europe and buy a plot? You cannot. Even with that lovely scam that the Italians love running, that one of pay €1, but you need to provide a balance sheet in your bank account that says you will spend €200,000 in fixing or improving the property. Do you have $3 million just lying around to renovate a house? And you know, if you have to renovate a house for $3 million, you're basically buying and building four houses. You're basically building and buying a whole complex for $3 million in Namibia. So in no way does the economics that you find in Europe make sense anywhere else in the world. Now, we unfortunately, guys, have reached the end of tonight's discussion. The matriarch, as she looks a slight bit sour, slightly silent, slightly quietened. But this does bring us to the end of tonight's discussion of the business and economic zone. I will still, you know, clarify this discussion point tomorrow evening, because on Good Friday is programming as usual. Dear listeners, do not run away. Do not switch off and think that we will be playing music for you. No, it's not a weekend. It's only just an off day for you. It's not an off day for me. So we'll be back. And we'll be having discussions. Nonetheless, we welcome the matriarch into the den. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dwight. How are you?
I'm all right. Why are you so sour?
I'm not sour. I'm just quiet. I'm a very quiet person.
Uh-huh. The eyes are shifting. What did you do? Who did you beat up? You beat up someone there. Let's hear that. Let's hear the juicy story.
No, nothing. I'm just quiet, you know? Today I'm just quiet.
Who got whooped?
I know. Today I'm just quiet, you know? I'm just chilled.
No, I need to not sound like an American. Who got whooped?
Nobody got whooped. I think I'm just enjoying the silence at work. The girls are off.
That's true, man.
Oh, the girls are off, so I'm just silent. Like, I like silence.
It's not even a zen moment. It's just...
silence.
Silence.
Yeah, except that massage music that's so annoying.
Are you playing
the... Oh, we have to play it most for the customers.
Are you playing the Asian-based ones?
I have... No, it's like we have the Indian, we have the rainfall, we have the...
Well, can't you just throw in a little bit of Cardi B in there?
They don't like that.
I don't want to sing the song. But
I'm telling you, they don't like
but
that.
At least...
Even just songs with words.
Oh.
Did that person say something? It's like, no, ma'am.
You're disturbing my zen.
Yes. I think I like silence.
So not even really, Amapiano.
I hate Amapiano. Amapiano is leftovers of good music. House music is leftovers of good music.
I also hate Amapiano.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened between Kwaito, ne?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And...
Kwaito has also a lot of noise. Once upon a time, you see, that's my matriarch.
I'm not talking about Namibian Kwaito, ne?
No, in general, Kwaito. Kwaito is most only South African and Namibian. What other Kwaito is there?
No, but do you know that Kwaito is actually a hip-hop? Do you know that? Mm. I'm throwing it in there. But nonetheless, the matriarch, let me not love you and leave you, as well as also to enjoy the night, while I have to go do schoolwork for some reason.
All right.
Yeah. So I'll have to leave you here.
Peace! Cool.
On that note, guys, please stay tuned and let the matriarch do her matriarchal
stuff,
you know?
Yeah.
Laugh at you.
Mm-hmm.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken, some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers,
limit or avoid travel, and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
The first free-range eggs produced and packaged in Ondangwa, Walenga eggs, are now available in 6s and 18s. These fresh free-range eggs are produced daily and have a shelf life of over 28 days. Now listen up. Free-range eggs are the most nutritious and organic eggs available for human consumption. Just yummy. We at Walenga Eggs also want to give every Namibian an opportunity to own a share in our value chain. So if you want to sell or distribute Walenga Eggs, call Omalaiti Foods at 0811-273622 or 0811-660707. This is a first for Namibia. Walenga Eggs, the Great White.